Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had...
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Andrew on the board. S&P futures up again, up 135. NASDAQ is up 541 as the absurdity in... Well, I guess it's good if you're long, and we're long, so I guess it's good. I'll say the action in Washington continues unabated. So today, Trump has no desire to fire Powell, so the huge sell-off the other day that was caused by him wanting to get rid of him is now going back the other way. And boy, I tell you what, if these guys aren't trading this stuff, they're not the people I think they are. I think it's pretty horrible, but it would just be me. But the good news is we're rallying. That's always good. Do we have Mr. Kevin?
Good morning.
Are you long spooed? Did you get the memo from Trump?
No, I didn't get the memo. But, yeah, when are people going to stop flying off the handle at every utterance? Because it's just going to change the next day.
It's market moving.
Yeah, get that.
Well, a lot of people are making a lot of money off it. Or if they're not, you know, I guess it could be, you know, he just wanders out of the can and says something. The one the other day about the Treasury Secretary, though, that was pretty priceless, that he was in a closed meeting with some people. They didn't say who the people were. No public, no press. Started talking about how the thing with China is unsustainable because evidently tearing both economies apart, so they have to come to a deal very rapidly. So giving everybody enough time to buy their futures, then they came out, and all of a sudden everything started to leak what he said, and it's been straight up since then. But, I mean, we're talking since Monday afternoon. We were down huge on Monday. And Monday afternoon, we started to come back on the close. We came back a couple hundred NASDAQ points. Well, since then, the NASDAQ has to be up. Including that, has to be pushing 1,500 points. I mean, that's 8 or 9%. 10, maybe? I mean, we're talking about the thought that these people don't know that that's going to happen. And it makes it worse if people get in ahead of it, because what happens is then is you got for people that don't necessarily understand the dynamic of how this works. If you end up, say for instance, me and a bunch of other schmucks are trading the OEX like we did for 20 years, or I did. If you're doing is trying to make a market, and if all of a sudden, you could be in a regular stock, you could be anywhere, and somebody comes in. And you've got some lazy stock that you're trading. You're trading, you know, pick a lazy stock, O'Neill Enterprises, and you know, the thing's trading, you know, 30 to an eighth. And all of a sudden, somebody comes in and says, "I'll buy 10,000 shares at an eighth." Everybody goes, "Okay." Well, maybe now your market's 30 to a quarter. Somebody comes in and says, "I'll buy 10,000 at a quarter." Now you're sitting there going, "All right, what does everybody seem to know but us?" It's there making a market in the stock. So now we're 30 and an eighth bid, hoping to God the next guy comes in and sells, so now we can at least scratch. Scratch means break even on the first trade we did. So now we're 30 and an eighth, 30 and three eighths. Now the next person comes in, I'll buy another 10,000 at three eighths. And oh, by the way, how much you guys got at a half? We'll buy some there too. Well, now all of a sudden you've jammed the crowd into a short position that they now have to cover. So even if only a few more other people come in and buy, the crowd is now a net buyer. So you force people in a short position, now they have to cover. So it doesn't take all that much to get this ball rolling, especially in a market where there's not a whole lot of standing orders and the market fabric is a little wobbly to begin with, in one man's opinion. So any kind of front running, in addition to the craziness of nobody making any real tight markets, because why would you, causes this kind of stuff. I mean, we're talking 3% moves two or three times a week. There were years we didn't have a 1% move all year. This is insanity. It's not healthy even on the way up, in my opinion. So, I mean, I think we need to do some stable stuff, whatever it happens to be. Say what you're going to do and just do it, and not every single day change your mind back and forth, because these are all, Kevin, the amount of money that can be made here, front running this stuff, is dramatic. I mean, it's freaking dramatic. We're talking about in the queues. The Qs were at, where were they? They're at 457. We're short to 453, so, which isn't great, but we're long the Qs. The things were, I think they were four. I'll look here on the graph. I mean, this is just a, you know, this is an index. This is not supposed to be a crazy stock. This is an index. I've got it at, where are we? 1 year. We'll get the 1 year here. Now we'll get the 6 month. And, where were we? We're 421. 422, we were at 437. Now we're at 457. That's 9% in what, 2 days? That's kind of a lot. And all because, yeah. But it's not because, you know, somebody decided to pay their World War I debt or anything like that. It's just utterances out of the White House. And the more they do it, the less liquid things are going to be, and the more it's going to
work. How many years of this do people stop saying, I'm not going to fly off the handle at every utterance because it's probably going to change? I mean, it don't you think at some point that's going to happen?
Well, but what do
you, that people would acquire some patience and some common sense?
Well, yesterday we sold some calls for clients that were like $8 out of the money. That's a lot. For like 40 cents just for the day. Because we're not trying to be greedy. We're just trying to nip a little bit to cover some of the money we pay for puts. Couldn't have been. Hour and a half later, this starts to leak about the Secretary of Treasury. Up, 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 up it goes. And I said to Daniel, we better roll these things out. So we buy. These were the 448s. And when we sold them, we're at 441. So we're talking about a 7-point move in 5 hours, which used to happen once every 3 years, maybe. So now all of a sudden we cover them, we roll up to the 53s, and now it's at 57. Now we'll roll them again today, and we'll be okay. Plus we're up a bunch on the underlying, but the point is these are daily moves. We're forced to make a trade because of what they said. It's not like we're panicking, because we'll do a roll and we'll be fine. But the when you have 2% and 3% and 4% moves, most people, if you have any kind of portfolio, have to do some balancing. And you know, you cause people to have to do stuff. The point is, why does anybody? When's the last time you were in charge of any business where you came out and said you're going to fire somebody on a Monday and a Tuesday, say, no, you're not going to fire him? First of all, you can't fire him because he's independent. You probably could make his life miserable enough where he'd want to get out of there. But, I mean, what is the point of all this? The man's independent. I looked yesterday. The money supply numbers have not been out for March yet because, of course, this is a Biden thing. We don't give out weekly numbers anymore. We only give out monthlies. And, oh, by the way, we give out a month late. So, now, I think, Kevin, the people who put out the weekly numbers and gather these numbers still have them. And if they have them, they're going out to somebody. They're just not going out to you and me, which is a real problem because we're trying not to. We have laws that say that companies can't put out any information that everybody doesn't get. Yet the government decides we're not going to put out weekly money supply numbers anymore, but by the way, we're still going to calculate them, and maybe some people are going to get them. Isn't that spectacular? So now with the 1 month since Trump has been in office, the increase in money supply has, on a yearly basis, if you expand it out, is 5.2%, which is, by the way, inflationary. It's not fighting inflation. It's pouring money into the system, which is exactly what Trump wants, and yet he's criticizing the guy. It's not like he cut it back 2%, where he's really trying to fight inflation and flipping the president off. He's doing exactly what he wants him to do. But the guy just keeps talking. It's always somebody else's fault or something. But I mean, how much more this month? You know, maybe Trump has the weekly numbers. I don't know. Maybe this month it will be down. In which case, Trump might say, "Why all of a sudden are you cutting back on this stuff when we've been doing this for 15 years, foolishly?" But look, for the one number we have since the month the guy's been in office, he's got no bitch with this guy. In fact, he's putting more money in the system than he should be. Now, whether he cuts rates or not doesn't make any difference. It's the amount of money he puts in the system. Because if he puts money in the system, the rate will actually drop even though he doesn't cut them. But since we don't seem to have anybody who takes economic education anymore, how many people have any idea of what I just said?
Well, I don't know how many have any idea, but I go back to, you know, I mean, my reaction to anything that that Trump says is I say, well, maybe I'll wait and see what really happens. And that's the part I don't understand, why so few people don't see it that way. You know, maybe I'm in the wrong. Maybe everybody else is right and I'm wrong. But I just can't get too wound up every time he says something, because I know it's likely to change, to modify, you know, to, you know, for something to happen that means it's not going to do that. And all the investment money that is tied to that just doesn't doesn't make sense to me.
Well, you're down, in some cases, you're down 15-20% on some of your stocks, and some are way worse than that since the guy's in office on policies. You know, whether they should or shouldn't be, I don't know. But maybe they were too high in the first place. They probably were. But the fact is, you're on edge. And probably some people might have actually sold out of their positions because they're like, I can't lose anymore. And all of a sudden, in 2 days, we're flying right back up again. I mean, it's one thing to say people shouldn't react the way they do, and I'm sure as hell not going to disagree with you on that. But the simple fact is, for somebody who's doing this all day long, people do. And when they do, other people have to react because it's... I mean, I have to do a lot of stuff in 2 days if the difference in the queues is 441 versus 457. And I'm trying to maintain any kind of a protective strategy, or God help me if I'm trying to do a covered right strategy. You can say that we used to, when we first started the Protect Index program in 1997, we would buy year and a half out puts. And I'm going to say, Kevin, on average, in those 10 years between 97 and 2007, when we were money manager of the year, the market was actually down in those 10 years, and we were up pretty substantially. Not huge, but something, when everybody else was down. And the market had 220% corrections, and we were never underwater. So we took the volatility out, and we made some money when everybody else didn't. You know, it wasn't a lot, but it was something. But we probably had to roll our protective puts, I'm going to say, twice the first year. Now, if we don't roll them twice a week, it's an unusual week. Twice a week. That's how crazy this up and down. Mark, you're right. Stuff should not... You shouldn't be, oh, there's no tariffs. Oh, there's all kinds of tariffs. Oh, no, we're going to make a deal. Oh, no, screw the Chinese. I didn't like the meeting. This is insanity, Kevin. But, I mean, yeah, I suppose at the end of the day, somebody somewhere who's got enough money or whatever has his feet up and said, I didn't pay any attention to any of it, I just wrote it all out. But it's really hard to do. Because, right. You know, I mean, it is. I mean,
it's hard to do because collectively we do pay attention, but if collectively we didn't pay attention, that would be a different matter, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, I just, I met a lady last night. She's signing up an account, wants us to manage. Now she's, I think, she has some equity, but she's also got a really good job, and she's got money coming in, and she wants to be reasonably aggressive. Okay, so that'll be fine. But if the person's 82 years old and he's got his entire portfolio is in Apple and something else, and all of a sudden Apple, well, it's up a bunch this morning. It was down to 195 or something, which is really low for Apple. Nvidia was under 100. Now it's 104.65. You don't think the calls are pouring in to the White House when these stocks fall off like they did on Friday and Monday? Or Friday, we're close. Thursday, I mean, what are you doing to my market? What are you doing to my market? And you don't think that this is part of some sort of a... When you've caused this... Well, you don't think anybody... if these guys don't call up and say, what the bleep are you doing? How the hell am I going to get elected a year from November if the market's down another 30%? What are you out of your mind? You don't think this is happening? Now, why there can't be somewhat of a steady course, whichever course it is, you know, I don't know. But the chaos is real and it's there. And if somebody's 82 and he's got Apple and he says, oh my God, or NVIDIA, I used to have, you know, $3 million in my account, and now I've got $1.7 million. I'm getting pretty darn worried. And he says, I want to sell. You in your best of days, the person I met last night, I would probably say, don't sell. Hang on, maybe we'll protect it, we'll do something. But if you're 82 and that's all the dough you have left in the world, who am I to say, oh no, don't worry, it'll pop back up. How the hell do I know? Right? I mean, it makes it very difficult because every single person is unique. And in the market for different reasons. Some people are in there because they're just screwing around and they've got, you know, 90 bazillion in houses and they got 50,000 in the market. So what? Not so what. I mean, it's real money. But other people, you know, they're on Social Security, they got $2 million in the market, and all of a sudden, which they probably shouldn't have, but they did because in the last 20 years you couldn't get any interest. And all of a sudden they're down to $1.2 million, and that's a whole different conversation, and it's a bad conversation. You really like to say, well, at this level, probably want to hang on, or maybe you want to buy some more. But you can't tell that to somebody who's on the edge, who's down 800 grand or whatever it is. Somebody's stocks are down tremendously. We have a real lot of stock in stock that we manage. People used to work for Accenture. Stock was 380. I'm going to say 2 months ago. Yesterday it was 282. What am I supposed to tell that person? Oh, don't worry. Accenture's a fine company. Just hang in there. Okay, what if it goes to 180 or 50? I mean, I don't know what they're doing. I mean, how does anybody know what Accenture's doing? How do you know what the thing in China is going to affect them? How much? I mean, how much? It's hard for anybody, unless you're. That's all you do is for me to have a clue as to what percentage of their consulting firms is in China and Korea and these kinds of places, South Korea. I mean, how would anybody know? And so for you to just say, oh, don't worry, it's a fine company. I'm never going to make that statement. Yeah, it seems like a fine company to me, but for God's sake, you got 90% of your equity in this place. You don't know anything about it, and neither do I. That's pretty dangerous, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so it's, as I'm saying, everybody wants to get, you know, stuck in the same hole like at Fisher Investments or someplace. The fact is, people are so unique, they don't even know how unique they are. I mean, they really are. It's like, that's the way people are. They're very unique. Look at the people on the show. Every one of them is bright as can be. Every one of them is so different, aren't they? I mean, some of us are pretty similar in our love for sports and things like that. But in terms of where they are investment wise, some people are working, some people aren't. You know, even in our little group, it's different. I mean, Hal's portfolio, because he's still a professor and is going to be for a while, his portfolio probably is going to look different than Carl's, who's retired. But then Carl does enough consulting for work that if he really needed to, he could do something. Now, somebody else might be totally retired, is never going back. Just in those three people, the portfolio should look different, correct?
Well, you would think so, but that isn't even what I'm really getting at. All I'm saying is that we have this collective way to fly off the handle at every utterance, and history says you shouldn't.
Well,
and yet we do. I don't understand.
A president, if he does it, going against certainly the convention and probably the law, firing the Federal Reserve chairman because he didn't immediately cut income rates because he wanted him to, is an amazingly unprecedented thing that everybody in the world would look at here and say, what the bleep? They had, what's her name, Lagarde on yesterday. What happens if they asked her, what happens if Trump fires Powell or finds a way to get rid of him or does something? She's like, that'd be terrible. Because people are convinced that the Federal Reserve is acting, even though it's probably not true, totally, is acting as an independent person. All of a sudden you strip that away. You have, you know, amazing disbelief and carnage on the world markets.
Wait, by the way, what was the exact quote, the first one that had everybody saying he's going to fire Powell? Because I did not... I had heard news report of that, but I have not heard the exact.
Well,
quote,
there was a huge insult in there, and that he was an idiot or something. That was part of it, and then he, You know, what Rand, was on yesterday's headline.
He's saying he should resign, or I'm going to get rid of him.
He was saying he needs to cut rate today. He's out of touch. He's an idiot. Blah blah blah, and basically said, I can't wait for the day he's terminated or something like that. Terminated meaning like shot, I guess. I don't know. But the word was terminated, which is even interesting choice of words.
Oh, it's a business choice of words.
Yeah, well, it was something like, I can't wait till the day he's terminated or something like that. Very close to that. So yeah, it wasn't like it was a hint. I wonder what's coming. His termination. His termination cannot come soon enough. Was the quote?
To me, you know, what he would have said on Monday, I would wait for Tuesday and see what's really the deal here.
Well,
that's just me. You know,
there aren't many people.
Whoever you see fit.
There aren't many people that you meet in a saloon, Kevin, would say, I can't wait for somebody to be terminated, and then the next day say they're okay. Yet alone,
I know, but there aren't that many people I meet in the saloon who don't have whatever who say whatever comes into their head comes out of the mouth, and isn't necessarily the way it is. And maybe it's because I understand that pretty well, because when I walked onto a court or a field or something, that's pretty much how I am. If it comes into my head, it comes out of my mouth. I'm pretty circumspect in real life, but when it comes to competing, I'm not. So maybe I just understand the mindset a little bit better.
Well, I mean, there's no question, I think, in pro football games, you say stuff to the guy on the other side of the line that maybe you wouldn't want. But then again, we don't really make one of those guys presidents, do we? And maybe they clean it up when they get off the field. Some people don't, evidently. Just saying. But no, there was no mistaking his termination cannot come soon enough. There's no mistaking him, like, oh God, I sure wish we had a different guy or something like that. There was no soft pedal about it at all. So anyway, that's where you have it. Now we're left with, I've been reading anecdotally, although I should have dug in no more yesterday, but we're trading so much. A lot of the shipments from China and other places are allegedly, the amount of ships leaving has dropped precipitously. Have you heard anywhere that people don't have stuff? I mean, are people? I also heard that people.
Oh, absolutely. There are a lot of people who are saying you always have some kind of stock, so not that much has changed in a week. But as an example, people have new orders, going forward. And they're saying, "Oops, not going to have supplies for that." So now I'm back in touch with my customers and saying, "We're going to have to look at our contract again and look at the delivery dates."
Kevin, if you could make a stab, maybe it's more of a Carl question, but then again, I don't know if he's as up on this as he always was. But just normal stuff being put together, you know, washing machine, refrigerator, those kinds of things. How many parts in there, little relays, little motors, little things that you don't even think about, have no other source but China or Taiwan or Vietnam? China?
There are sources. There are sources. There are alternative sources. And all of those companies are trying to make hay. So, they've been the more expensive but high-quality provider now, and they are doing exactly what I said was going to happen in the auto industry. Is everybody who wants some new market share, wants some new customers, is knocking on doors and saying, hey, we're not affected, we can ramp up production, we're ready to roll.
Well, because I've read, and again, the hell, whatever you read, you never know, but I've read that, like, some parts in automobiles, like the little motors for the moon roofs and all those kinds of things, are currently single sourced. A lot of that stuff is single sourced in China.
Boy, is that bad strategy. I mean, bad strategy in the best of times.
Well, I mean, I honestly do not have an opinion on it, because all I remember is years ago, the family that said they weren't going to buy anything from China and made it to May, and then they promised the kids a blow up swimming pool, and there was none made anywhere. But I wish somebody maybe the person doesn't even exist, they could say, by the way, the pick-me-up you just bought, there's 50 parts in there that only come from China. And by the way, they're the parts that move the seats or the parts that move this or God knows what they are. I mean, have you read anything in that regard that, you know, used to be 100, but now you can get 50 somewhere else? Is there some improvement? I mean, does anybody know? I mean,
There's a lot. I've talked to purchasing people. Yeah, there's a lot of them that are now sourced. You know, they're knocking on doors in other parts of the world, as well as locally. They're all over it.
What's IKEA going to do?
There's not a lot of people who sit on this kind of stuff.
Well, I get it. If you got a product to put out,
like that, they're on it.
I'm sure if you're the boss, you're saying, "Hey, Joe, find me another place for that part. We're not going to stop producing pickup trucks for the seat motor." I mean, I get it. I just question how easy it is, how you find somebody. I mean, or they find you, or there's still probably a few left, but maybe there are workarounds. I don't know.
As an operations manager, and therefore I would be the same as a purchasing manager, I am never going to not turn around and tell my salespeople to stop succeeding. So I'm going to find a way to get product out the door, whatever it takes.
Yeah, I think I understand with you and agree with you that's the American way. I'm just the question. I'm curious as to just, you know, how buried we are. Can IKEA get a shot glass from any place else? Not that anybody cares about a shot glass, but. You know what I'm saying? I mean, or how long is it going to take, or where do you have to source them? You have to go buy
drink right out of the bottle anyway. So what are you worried about?
You can use any glass. I get that. I get that part. But
I'm pretty sure I remember you with, you know, like a brown bag and a bottle.
Oh, God. Well, you know, the worst was when we were at the Sugar Bowl game, and Billy Hake and I went in, and we had all the line. There was all these lines to get in the bars, right? So. We said, well, why don't we go get something, or at least wait in line. We don't have to parch ourselves. So we go in this place, and Billy bought a pint of Jack Daniels. That's how bad it was. And the guy goes, after we paid for it, the guy goes, you can't take that out. Billy goes, what are you talking about? We just bought it. He hands us two cups. He goes, well, you got any ice? No. So we had, a pint, like 16 ounces. The guy gave us 2 8-ounce cups. That was it. We walked out the door, but gently holding him so we didn't spill anything. I'm going, Bill, this was a bad idea. He goes, yeah, it was. Jack Daniels, you know what? You got to doctor that stuff up a little, at least with some ice. But there we were out on Bourbon Street.
Once you got the first 4 ounces down, you were fine.
Oh, yeah, then you were fine. We were fine, all right.
You didn't need it after that.
Well, then it started raining. It was bad. We were in Pat O'Brien's and talk about fun stuff, eh? Hey, what'd you think of conversation the other day about, with Mike and John regarding where we're going on the taxation and all the other stuff of these college sports, and are some conferences just going to make their own rules and just pull out and say, this is what we're doing for our place, you guys do whatever you want. I think that's probably the only thing that can slide by the courts, to be honest with you. But I'm not the attorney.
Well, I can think of a few things that would slide by the courts. I don't know what, at this point, I don't know what the NCAA is thinking, other than, that there's got to be people out there floating the idea of making them employees. Because that's, you know, that's at least an opportunity to, put people under contract, get, you know, have a term to the contract and so on. So I won't be surprised to see that happen, but I don't know if the colleges are ready to make that leap.
Okay, well, work through the math for me there, because I know that would solve some of the problems, but I also think it's totally unworkable. I mean, if for instance, you know, one of the Sater's a basketball player at Notre Dame that's making $2 million from someplace, and the someplace is, you know, $1.8 million from Under Armour, $50,000 from Pete's Pizza, somebody else, maybe what's his name, the old quarterback, is giving him $150,000 to show up at a hospital one night a week for the semester or something. how does that money get to Notre Dame and Notre Dame write that $2 million check? I don't see it happening.
Maybe it will or maybe it won't. How does it work now in the NFL for an NFL football player? or an NBA basketball player.
Well, that's different. The Bulls are a separate organization. They're taxable. They're everything else. They're not hiding under, Holy Name Cathedral.
So if you pay a guy what he's worth to your program, which could be $1 million, $2 million, whatever it is, if you see that kind of value in it, that's your contract with him, and you're paying him directly out of the athletic department's budget, which has an incredible amount of revenue attached to it.
Well, okay, but right now here's my
then if he wants to go get an Under Armour deal, good for him.
Right, but here's my the money. If all of a sudden, you go to the Notre Dame. We're picking on Notre Dame because that's the place we know best. What do you think has to what do you think the basketball program looks like if they have to write that $1 million check, $2 million check? I don't think they'd much rather have somebody else pay the guy. Don't you think the Bulls would much rather have somebody else pay the guy instead of them?
Who wouldn't?
Well, I'm not so sure that the basketball program, clearly the women's basketball program, I mean, these ladies are on TV because they're articulate, they're attractive, and by the way, they're good basketball players. Well, I don't think the Notre Dame women's program is going to pay Hidalgo $1.5 million and still make money, do you?
I don't know, because it's damn near impossible to discern what their revenue streams really look like.
I'm gonna take a stab. I'm gonna say, not on your life. The Alabama football program, maybe. Actually, the one that takes in the most money is Texas, right? Allegedly, from the ones you can...
Except that's not reliable data, so I always admonish people. Where everybody goes to get their information is an EEOC report, a Title IX report, and the only thing the schools have to report accurately is the expense side of it. The revenue... Some report it, and they'll report a lot of it and show a net, a gross margin. And others will actually plug into the revenue side the precise number that is the total of the expenses. And when half of a conference is basketball players, and the last time I looked at this, it was the Big East, all have the revenue and the expenses matching to the dollar, that's not true.
So, well, I would say you're right on that.
so you have an unreliable source. So what Texas reports more income than anybody else, but I don't know that that's true. And then you start getting into the how much of the income is off book, how much of a coach's salary is off book with, radio shows and TV shows and things like that. It's really, that's what I mean, it's damn near impossible to tell. So you may be right that there's no way that budget, that they can support that budgetarily, but that may not be true either.
Well,
and if you have the school lining up arrangements with companies, couldn't they just change the way they line them up and have that funnel through the school?
Possibly.
I think there's constructs where you could do that, and it wouldn't be that difficult.
Possibly, but I'm just trying to make a nudge and say, okay, let's take the Indiana program, for instance, and put our two behinds on the board at Indiana, and somebody walks in and says, we're going to clean all this up. We're not going to have any of this crap guys getting money from other places and stuff, which, by the way, you can't stop, I don't think, but we're just going to pay people direct right here. By the way, last year our football program made, I'll pick a big number, $20 million. Our projections are that 2 years from now, we're going to be paying players 50. And you and I sit there and go, "Say what?" I'm not so sure. Maybe the top five programs can handle it, Kevin. I don't think you're the one who said how easy it was to get tickets all year long at Florida State. Do you think Florida State can drop a $50 million payroll on their football team and have the thing look halfway decent on a chart? I don't. I'd have a real. I'm going to take the under on that.
I'm not sure what their broadcast rights are. So for the ACC, I haven't looked at that in a while. But I know the Big Ten is looking, you know, in excess of $50 million a school, so...
Okay, but all I'm saying is that money is now going someplace. They think it's theirs. And they're real comfortable with other people paying the players. And if you say, okay, by the way, you're right, maybe, you know, instead of Under Armour paying 20 people and making sure they go to Notre Dame, I guess they could just up their number to Notre Dame and swing it through that way. I mean, I'm pretty good with numbers. That can happen. But, I mean, if you right now, I just wonder how many programs could, on the surface, absorb the money that other people are paying the players. And I'm saying very few. Without some swing-around deal like you're talking about.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I think you drop $40 million on Notre Dame, they got a problem. Plus, nobody treats their shekels closer to the vest than that place. If they were actually paying somebody, they'd want the guy's hide. Don't you? What do you mean? I paid you this much money for 2 years, and you're leaving. You're leaving, but not with your knees intact. I mean, really?
Well, maybe that's the construct that'll work.
Well, you know, we used to have a contributor to the show, and maybe someday we'll again. He used to tutor. He grew up in Florida. Real bright guy. He used to tutor some of the guys in high school so they could essentially get into college. We're talking football players, correct? Maybe there was a hoop star in there somewhere. And he said, you know, most of these kids could never really get in. But with the tutoring and stuff, if they applied themselves, you know, they could get in there and get a college degree if they wanted to. He said all of a sudden, you know, when the kid's uncle is showing up with a new pickup truck. Basically, he said the family didn't have a pot to piss in, so the truck came from someplace. I remember him telling me one night over an adult beverage, he goes, you know, if all of a sudden the kid said, I'm not going to state, I'm going to someplace else, somebody might have a broken leg somewhere, because the person who bought the pickup is not putting up with that. I mean, it's always been sort of in the, you know, when you, I don't think, I'm not a violent guy, but if I cared enough about my university to buy somebody going there a pickup truck and he changes his mind the next day, I'd have a problem with it, wouldn't you?
Well, and the fact is, yes, and there are players that I'm aware of that if they had decided to change their mind, they were under a threat of violence. So, yeah, that's real.
What do you suppose, and I mean, I'm sure there's probably not a contract. I hear tell some of the, you know, people we once in a while have an adult beverage with downstairs, or they're from the hood, and they know of, you know, a lot of people know, well, people know a lot about everybody pretty much anywhere. I mean, if you're in the, well, first of all, if you're in my business I was in on the trading floor when you got 1,800 people in one room, you knew a lot about a lot of stuff just because people were there. And these guys were telling me that they, one of the guys, his neighbor's nephew or somebody, got a six-figure deal in high school. Now, I don't know if it was high school or was AAU or what it was. And now, of course, you know, we've gone through this before. He, too young to sign a contract, so somebody's signing it.
I don't know who is signing a contract, Tom, because I don't know that the parents can sign off on a contract for the kid to do endorsements.
Why not?
Think about that.
Parents sign off on contracts. Kids, when they're 6 months old, to be in movies, what's the difference?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Where's Lou when we need him, but...
That's a good question. I don't know who can sign off on what, but what if the kid blows it off?
Well, but who's
obligated here? The parent would be obligated.
You essentially asked me the question I was just going to ask you. What exactly? Maybe there is no contract. Maybe just give the kid a check or cash. No. What's the implied contract? What do they think they're buying, and what does the kid or the parents think that they're selling?
Well, once they're of legal age, that's the college part of it. Once they're of legal age, they can sign contracts. So if you have a Gatorade or a State Farm or, you know, some of the others that are big visible players in the college endorsement market.
How old were you when you went to Notre Dame? I was only 17. I didn't be 18 until the end of November.
I turned 18 right before I went.
Okay, so I mean, but there are people that are 17.
You were never 17, Tom.
Well, I know.
You might have been nominally 17, but you were really about, you know,
50?
40. Yeah, 40, 50, something like that.
Well, that's how you got your booze bought.
That, well, it is.
So there's a silver lining to every cloud, I guess. But you know, the question is, what do you... I love this stuff. Always interests me, Kevin, because it's so much like business, right? What do you really think you're buying? What do you really think you're selling? Now, does somebody, by giving the family and the kid a chunk of change when he's a junior in high school because he's terrific at AAU and he looks like he's going to be a star? You can tell difference makers at an early age. Talked a little bit about that the other day. There's people in every sport that are just difference makers. Where the one guy walks out to center field and the left field and right fielder look at the guy and walk four steps toward the line because they know that guy's got it covered. And you know, there's going to be four balls a week that outfield gets that nobody else gets, right? Or maybe five. And that's what happens. There's going to be a shortstop that comes out there and the third baseman sees him make one play and he immediately moves over the line and says, that guy's got way more covered than I've ever seen. The guy might not be able to hit. He might last 2 years, but people have these talents that if you don't play sports, you don't quite recognize probably. But I'm saying, what exactly are they buying, and what do you think? What does he think he's selling, implied or otherwise? You're closer with me. What do you think? Are they directing him to a certain school, or do they get to bargain for him for college, or is it a? I mean, Lou said that he got out of the agency business by being an agent for players. Not because he didn't like it, but because the law firms he was with, these kids get out of college, whether they graduate or not, they're done with their senior year. Well, we're talking about showing my age. They now become draft eligible. They want the agent to buy the car. They wanted to pay him totally to go to the combine. Best hotels, cars, you know, big dinners, all that stuff. You're supposed to pay all that. And Lou's firms wanted no part of that. And that's why he's not an agent. I'm sure he might have somebody that he still does stuff for that's reasonable, but wants no part of those guys where you're on the hook for like all the money up front. Now, is that what happens in high school? You give the guy the dough and you get to tell him what college you go to and you cut the deal with the college and then take a percentage going forward of that as if you're an agent. Maybe it's the same thing.
Well, what would you expect if you were on the selling on the adult side of that, let's say? What would you expect?
I would say that you'd want a contract with the kid or the parents for being his marketing representative. I won't use the word agent. I'm going to give the kid 50 grand. That's enough for some kind of car for the parents to do whatever they need to do. And then I'm going to negotiate a great deal with him at a school where he's going to go. And I'm going to get 20% of what he makes for the next 5 years or maybe forever. Like, just like an agent would do, right?
Yeah. Now, Jervon Dexter on the Bears actually had a lawsuit over that because when he was at Florida, that his contract with somebody, I can't remember who the other party was because I've been away from it for over a year now, but his contract said that they are entitled to a percentage of his NFL earnings. And the problem wasn't that he signed it. The problem was that in Florida, at least at that time, that was not legal. They had a very specific law that said you can't do that.
Well, so how else are you supposed to get paid?
But that was the expectation there, and that's why I brought it up, is when you say, what's the expectation, that was it, that you're going to get some earnings flow out of that indefinitely.
Well, I mean, it's they're not going to be able to pay hourly for putting the whole deal together, not like you're an attorney, right?
Yeah,
none of these cutthroats.
Now you're going to start saying, "Well, what does Under Armour or Nike or somebody like that expect if they sign a high school kid?" Well, they definitely want them to go to a college where they have the rights, for apparel and outfitting. They have the rights to have the swoosh on the uniform, or the logo on the uniform, and they want those programs to be as strong as possible because it makes those rights more valuable to them. So I'm sure that's their part of the equation.
What do you suppose the difference in revenue for the school, pick Notre Dame, for instance, because they, or even Indiana, Nike probably, what Russell said it, but I forgot. What kind of school is Indiana? Notre Dame's Under Armour. I don't think Indiana is. I don't think it's Nike either. Are they Adidas? Whatever, Russell's. Adidas,
yeah, but I don't know.
But, I mean, what do you suppose the jolt in revenue, and we're not talking about tickets and all the other crap. Let's say Indiana's Nike. I'm going to say that Indiana sold way more Nike-sponsored Indiana jerseys this year than they ever sold before. We ran into a whole bunch of those people the night before they were going to South Bend. Boy, what a nicer group of people I never met. They were terrific. They just were real happy to be there. If they happened to win, was great, but the fact they got so far, it was like Notre Dame. We went to the first bowl game, for God's sake, when I was a freshman. I mean, I'm going to say they had a... Do you think they tripled their normal amount of jerseys and hats and stuff? I bet it was more than that. Did you? Everybody here had one on.
Their licensed merchandise was absolutely huge.
Yeah.
So that's Nike, and that's the school, because the school's getting its cut of that. But, again, when we talk about what's the football program make, what's the basketball program make, those contracts are for the school for all of their programs. So how that gets allocated, I have no idea.
But, I mean, every jersey that goes out, Nike makes money on. So if you triple the amount of jerseys, that whatever they gave the school, is they got a better deal than they thought. Let's put it that way. Because they shouldn't expect Indiana to be in the hunt like that.
Yeah, so watch, Indiana's going to want to renegotiate now.
Well, I mean, I think on the simple stuff, like say, go back to Champion in a bookstore. The Irish had a good year. Champion sold twice as many shirts, right? We're not talking about contributions or anything. We're talking about how many more shirts are there, if the stadium's full or not. The people in Chicago, every one of them had something on, and there were stores here in Chicago that all of a sudden had Indiana lines of stuff. But the numbers fascinate me, as you probably understand. So they get to push this kid towards, say, Indiana. Or I'm guessing if the guy at Notre Dame had the big Under Armour contract, if he wanted to blow off Notre Dame and go to another Under Armour school, they probably wouldn't have as big a bitch, do you?
Probably not, but I would say they want as big a profile as they can get.
Right.
In any circumstance. So I don't know who the other Under Armour schools are. I'd have to get a list of that to tell you.
I think maybe Northwestern's one.
Because if the Under Armour school that he chose instead is Georgia, well, okay, you can make that work.
I think Northwestern might be one because, in fact, they might have been the first. Because I remember reading articles years ago about how they had to use Under Armour shoes, and the shoes really sucked. They thought they were giving people broken ankles and stuff or something. Evidently, Under Armour's first iteration on shoes weren't so hot, or something.
Yeah, I remember that being the case as well. And since then, they have improved the product substantially.
Yeah, I would. Where do you suppose they make those? Vietnam?
Don't know.
I don't think too many. I didn't realize that making shoes was actually pretty labor intensive. Somehow or another, I had the feeling mentally
you would think that you could, you could go highly automated with them, but that isn't the truth. It doesn't seem to work very well.
No,
as a production process.
So what do you make of? Is there a chance, whatever policy we land on, that some of this day to day chaos is going to drop off? Because it's just not. I don't think it's healthy to markets, Kevin. I mean, I know a lot of people don't care about markets, but I don't know if it's healthy to stock prices. I mean, Tesla's way back up here. They're up huge, even though their numbers are horrible. Now, maybe people thought they were going to be worse. That's why you got to be real careful if you start trading. Actually, Kevin, talking about a story. I'm trading the OEX pit. When there was no stock there. It was an index, right? So, of course, so many people around, other guys. And there was a guy in the... I think it might have been the telephone crowd. I'm not sure. So one of the dudes, of course, his dad was a specialist someplace. So he got the IBM earnings like 2 hours before anybody else. He got the call from the you know, vice president of finance or whatever, chief financial officer, CFO. And so I said, how the hell does that work? The guy goes, they went to the same prep schools together. You think anybody that wants to go to one of those prep schools, you go there because that's the people you meet, and that's what happens. That you're in that group of people. Otherwise, nobody would ever go to one of those places. They suck so bad. I didn't even know what a prep school was coming out of the Midwest. But
it's all about getting in the club.
It's all about getting in the club. And but the weird part was, Kevin, the guy knew the earnings like 12 months in a row, and he made money only 1 month. Well, you never know what people's reactions are going to be to earnings. You'd probably rather have the number, but they're like labor numbers. Good news, bad news. What did people expect? I mean, Tesla's deliveries were down, what, like 12 or 20%, and yet stock's rallying because it was already down so much. And people were saying, well, if it's only down that much and Musk is going to get rid of Doge and go back and start running the place again, that it can only go up, you know, or whatever, or it's tied with the market running up here or something. I mean, that's what makes the business so fascinating. You never really know, even though everybody says they always know. Nobody does. Except two things. If you give me a Trump utterance 10 minutes before he utters it, which I don't know how you could do that, or if you give me a Federal Reserve speech, I think I can make money pretty much all the time. Give me a labor number, give me an earnings number, I don't know. I don't want to go to jail for that because I'm not so sure I can make any money at it. With the sometimes good news is bad news, sometimes good news is good news. I don't think you can interpret those numbers at all for trading. Yet Fed announcements, political announcements, yeah. Just saying, if the Fed were to make a quick move, yeah. For a while they were giving speeches overnight in China back when we used to go to China. Yeah, would I want the content of that speech before the market closed the day before? Yeah. Labor numbers, even earnings numbers, unless they're horrible, there's going to be some pre-announcement or something. Those are hard to trade. Just saying, it's not like, you know, it's not like Beaks and Trading Places where the crop report, everybody expecting one thing, if it's materially different, I bet you could always trade those too. But it's not just inside information, it's what information is it?
Worth the risk, because that gorilla was pretty excited to have Beaks.
Yeah, what, just, you know, without lobbing, the question was asked to me last night. If, in fact, for a trader, you always think that if there's money to be made, somebody's making it. That's just the way we think. I'm assuming that with all these market-moving things that are coming out of the White House, that somebody somewhere is doing something in advance. And you look at the people in Congress and how much they're trading, it's hard for me to believe that Trump has a blanket, you shall not trade on his people in the White House. But if it's egregious, Kevin, and somebody's actually doing it, where's the law enforcement there? Who's going to do it?
Oh, who's supposed to do it?
That's what I'm asking.
Well, who prosecuted? Who prosecutes other ones? Where did?
Well, I mean, you would think.
Did Martha Stewart come from? Was that the SEC?
Or
do they have to do a referral and then the FBI takes it from there? Or law?
No, her thing was she pissed off the people interviewing her. She didn't make any money on her stuff. She had no business going to jail for what she did.
Did she get nailed for lying to the investigators?
Something along those lines. Not playing nice to the investigators. But I mean, I don't see in today's world the SEC taking a laundry list of everybody in the White House and all their family and all of a sudden running an investigation this week to see who traded futures. I can't imagine that happening in the current Justice Department. I don't think Congress will do it. You know, the question is who will do it? I don't know. Wouldn't be my first thing I'd want to do as a newly appointed attorney general, would you?
Take on Congress?
No, take on the White House?
Oh, take, well, probably not.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Why do you think that a lot of young people are so disgusted with our country? They don't think anybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing. And I'll ask, I've asked a couple other people on the show. I'll ask you, we got a couple minutes. Why do people allow? I mean, Russell's probably on. On the CBOE floor, there were a couple people that, if you let them, would have been crooks, right? Most people really wanted the place to be pristine because they wanted everybody to know they got a fair deal there. They got a fair shake as a customer, and that was your livelihood. And if you ever screwed it up, guess what? You had no livelihood. And everybody really, really cared about that to a huge extent, to where you didn't allow people to you didn't want a headline of, Russell Rhodes stealing money from the customers in the IBM pit for the last 30 years, because all of a sudden it would sour the entire place. Plus, Russell would never do that. So you made
Damn
sure.
Damn it, Russell.
So, I did it. I fully admit it.
So yeah, now it's turned into a Perry Mason episode. Yeah.
We all know that I live in a house full of women, and everything is my fault.
Yes.
Well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
What did I do?
But I'm saying, nobody wanted to be tarred with that brush. And I honestly believe that out of the, 535 people in Congress, I'm going to say 400 of them are straight as an arrow. And there's some people.
No.
Some number.
No. Have you ever seen the crime stats on Congress?
Well, okay, I'm trying to be nice here.
Like a quarter of them have gotten DUIs. They're not straight as an arrow.
Okay, but
too generous.
Go ahead. I'm gonna stop.
But whoever it is, if there's 10 people that are straight, I don't want to be thought of as a crook because of my... In other words, I don't want to be tarred with that brush. Why do they put up with it? I mean, let's assume for a second that Durbin and Tammy Duckworth, since neither one of them seem to have any money, let's say they're straight. Why the hell would you want all those people around you getting away with this crap to where everybody looks at you and says, there goes a crook? We would never put up with that. Why do these people do it?
I don't know. Maybe because they're a little bit more public-facing than we were on the floor.
Well, I think there's some respect
there. I'll tell you why they probably put up with it, et cetera, is years ago... when I was at the options, in education at the Options Exchange, at church, they did they had a talk about, in order to get along, you had to go along with everybody else, and that's how I would describe the proper behavior on the trading floor, was that you really needed to you had to be honest. If you weren't honest, nobody would ever trade with you again. It was kind of a nice self-regulating area. But you got to figure it may work out to the opposite in Congress.
Well, I mean, I don't
know what I mean. That
Russell, I absolutely think that's what is happening. Is that you very much you can't rock the boat.
No.
Because when you rock the boat, then there go your committee assignments. There go your ability to do any good. And I think the rationalization that goes with that is pretty simple. It just says, look, if I want to do some good here, I'm going to have to make some compromises.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we learn from different creatures, but I'm going to say, Mike Quigley, I think he's my guy. I'm not 100% behind him on a lot of stuff, but I think, Mike is Mike's a pretty, I've known him for a long time. Mm-hmm. We're not friends or anything, but I don't think he's a crook.
No, he seems to have a pretty good reputation. And I've never heard anything negative about him.
So, if I walk into a bar some night, not that I ever do that, and somebody says, oh, you and all your buddies, all you do is trade all day and make money, I'll tell you what, maybe not, people aren't going to like me in Congress, but the next time I get out there, I'm going to get up on that stage, and I'm going to behind the mic, and I'm going to go, hey, you bleeps, cut it out. I'm not being tarred with that brush. The people that sit, I went through the thing the other day. What was it, Kevin? Did 6,000 trades last year?
Yeah.
I mean, I do that for a living. I don't know if I did 6,000. How is this a full time job when these guys are trading two and three times a day? How can you be a full time job being a congressman if you trade 2 and 3 times a day?
Well,
plus you have to spend the rest of your day doing fundraising.
Yeah,
that's right.
I mean, maybe I'm saying, why does Mike Quigley put up with it, or these other guys? And that, I mean, you're right. You got to go along a little bit. Maybe I think
you have to. You just You have to have the support of your party to get reelected. Not all of them, you know, but a big portion of them need to have the support of their party to get reelected. There's certain districts where you just, you know, it's a rubber stamp practically. You know, you can't totally rock the boat on that one. I mean, we don't know what the behind the scenes stuff was when AOC, you know, took a seat from a blue stronghold. He couldn't have been, you know, a favorite of the party if they allowed that to happen.
The only thing, well, one of the things
about, I know nothing about that situation, but you got to assume that somebody that came out of nowhere that did have some really nice financial backing, you know, being a party stalwart, that there's something going on there. Maybe he just didn't make enough with all of it trading with his inside information to keep his job.
Do you remember the picture when she was at the formal thing, and they took a picture of her from behind, and she had this white dress on. Let's say it was incredibly tight, and there was something written on her back. Something was written on her back in red.
Oh, the Eat the Rich thing?
And every guy I sent that to,
mm-hmm.
I said, did you see the thing written on her back? No, I never saw that.
Stupid.
All everybody saw is a very nice behind and a very tight dress. I first time I looked at it, I didn't see anything written on her back. Why was I looking there?
When she wore the multi-$100,000 custom made Eat the Rich dress to the Met Gala. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. I mean, to, you know, the one of the most exclusive parties in the world. And
who the hell was
I don't know if she ate anybody while she was in there or not, but if she wanted to eat the rich, they were all in the same room with her that night.
Well, you wonder when the Magnificent Seven here is taking the drubbing it did earlier in the week. I'd love to be a fly on the wall or a cockroach as to what pressure is flying into. I don't think these people hold back if they see something going on with their stock or whatever. I'll bet the amount of stuff flying into Washington. Do you realize what you're doing to my stock? You guys better do something. I bet there's pressure all over the place.
Oh, I'm certain there is. I'm certain there is.
I mean,
especially, and this is a random example, but you know, I grew up in Memphis. FedEx is extremely important to the Memphis economy. I think Memphis, if it weren't for FedEx, Memphis would be a ghost town. So if something is going on that has a negative impact on FedEx, I'm sure that the representatives from the Memphis area are getting a whole lot of phone calls.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Hey, Russell, Kevin's still here. I asked him earlier, and we didn't really know. Maybe I have a lot of Accenture stock from clients here that we protect and so forth, because a lot of people that work there got some of that stock as their retirement stuff. So it's sort of like UPS kind of thing. You work at UPS, you ended up. By the way, is FedEx the same way? Did you end up with a lot of FedEx stock?
No.
Okay. Because we seem to have had a lot through the years of UPS, and now we've got a lot of Accenture, but Accenture's pretty much gone nothing but straight down since we got it. It was down to 280 from 340, which is a lot, because it actually traded 380. I'll get the exact time up here. The stuff where the Z or whatever, whoever the guy is that runs China, in response to the tariff, he came out, and I think maybe the administration might have got bounced on this one a little bit in terms of, I think traded 276 a couple days ago, and it was, for God's sake, it was 311 on the 3rd of April. So that's a big move. When he came out and said we're gonna basically screw consultants as well as product, I think he might have fired a shot this way that maybe we didn't anticipate. But how much, and one of the former contributors, show John Lee over there, he started with Accenture and then he ended up with a couple other places. Who are the guys out of Finland, Kevin, that the big huge electronics firm that bought, anyway, they bought some other place, and a lot of your
Ericsson?
Yeah, those guys did a boatload of the stuff in cell towers, all the software For those that don't know, China never even really had was wired like here. They just went right to cell phones, right? And a real lot of that work went to these outside consulting firms. And how big, I guess, if they were to start cutting back on that, and a lot of these firms aren't even here, so I guess I don't know if we care that much about them, but how much of that is true, Russell, that it's not just all goods? We buy goods from them, but they buy... That's why
The issue with Accenture goes a lot deeper than just consulting services. Accenture basically given them guidance on how they could screw us over.
Okay. You mean as a consulting firm, they take kind of all subjects?
Yeah, no, they helped China figure out their communism with Chinese characteristics, which is, you know, communism on your people, but being involved in the business world.
Okay.
If you Google information about Accenture and the work they've done for China, they've really worked against some of the interests of the United States, and I think that's why they were gone after in all of this. I didn't realize they had been targeted in any way.
I'm not saying they are.
They should be.
But I saw the stock coming down. Well, the stock coming down, and seemingly with their threatening. I mean, there's a lot of people that do legal work over there and stuff, right?
I guess, but I know that I had, paying attention to some of the things that I pay attention to with respect to China, Accenture's name has come up a few times. So I wouldn't be surprised if, if we're getting into it with China, that Accenture is the child that we're not sure, what parent they're going to live with. Well, they're probably going to live with the U.S.
If you had a guess on a law.
Hey, I got to roll you guys.
Right, so. Kevin, we'll talk at you Friday, bud. Take care of yourself. Good stuff. If you had to name a law firm or two, which law firm?
I don't know. I really don't know. I just know Accenture because they're a public company.
We had at one
and,
point,
and that I've heard that in the past, and really, and then it's all cloudy memory. But I do know that they have been named as like a firm that has been very helpful to the Chinese against our interests.
Really, and we had I don't know if you can do it anymore, but we had a good friend of mine. I've got traded with him on the old trading floor. Billy McGowan, unfortunately, passed young. He was our guy at IB. And he's the one who got us into IB. And, so at one point we had we're doing some seminars, which we're doing for people, and we get these couple of guys from China. How they found us, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And all they did was sign for a seminar. We didn't even know if they were from China. And so they're there. It wasn't our seminar. It was somebody else's. We just were speaking. And the guy says, I'd like to put together a brokerage firm over in China and to trade over here. And I'm going, okay. Mm-hmm. And so I said to Billy, I go, can we even do something like that? And he goes, oh, yeah, get the guys. We'll have it done for you in a week. And I go, done? What are you talking about? Evidently, IB has a home in Hong Kong. Now, maybe this is 10 years ago, so maybe they don't anymore.
I've been to their offices.
He goes, if you want to have PTI Hong Kong, just let us know. Mm-hmm. We'll open up a spot for you over there. And if this guy wants to feed us and you trades from the mainland into Hong Kong, well, he's got to do all that himself because we don't know anything on the mainland. If he can get the trades to us, guess what? It's PTI Hong Kong. And I'm going,
yeah.
Really? I had no idea. Was that? Well, we never did it.
Oh, yeah. No, for SIBO, we would do a bunch of us would do 3 weeks in Asia in November and December every year. And you reached out and tried to fill in some of the gaps between the conferences that you were over there for, and I did a series of educational talks about trading VIX for Interactive Brokers affiliates that were in Hong Kong.
Okay.
Interactive Brokers officially wasn't allowed to be there, but they could provide all the kind of like they do for you at PTI. But a lot more in depth as far as the regulatory part goes.
Yeah, I mean they were going to be the whole.
It all looks like Interactive Brokers, but it's not like a knockoff Apple store. You know, it's in conjunction with Interactive Brokers.
Now, is that since Hong Kong's becoming more and more, shall we say, assimilated, in the words of the Borg on Star Trek, is that still going on, or have they been forced to flee? I don't know. I've never asked anybody.
I don't know. I haven't dealt with them, but I think it's still going on. I don't think they've really messed with, you know, as long as somebody wants to try and run one of those businesses, and the ability to, you know, to reach into the mainland China markets through Hong Kong, that it still exists.
Why does the recently, I mean, when I say recently, I don't keep track every day, but it seems to me just by observation that the Hong Kong markets have been very, very volatile on days where the mainland markets aren't even moving at all. Is the mainland markets become that quiet or silent? Or
no, they have two very, very different, very different constituencies. A lot more international companies involved in the Hong Kong, on the Hong Kong exchange. Just the matter of the control that they have over the flow of trades into any of the exchanges in mainland China has a definite impact on those stocks and the difference between the two.
Well, there's been some days,
and I don't know if it's still in place, but there used to be a limit as to the amount of trading that could come from outside of China each day. So if you have a whole, if you want to sell your stock, and they're not accepting any more orders from outside today, that can have an impact on the indexes, on the mainland indexes.
But there's been some days where Hong Kong's got a 2 or 3% move, and the one mainland's like unchanged.
I know.
They
control their stock. They try to control the stock market.
The
government likely comes in and buys stocks periodically just to sort of cushion the blow. But much like when Soros, broke the Bank of England, eventually those things catch up with them.
Well, there was a, just so you know, you can't. You couldn't call PTI and say you want to buy a stock on the mainland.
I suspect
we probably
couldn't. No, you got to go through a lot of hoops to be involved. That's why it's a big deal if you can do it.
But
I don't know why anybody would want to buy a stock over there.
But somewhere before COVID, they came out and said we're going to have, was it 8 or 10 firms here? Maybe it was only 5. That they were going to allow to trade over there so they could have essentially mutual funds, for lack of a better term. Morgan Stanley and a bunch of the big names all were allowed to have these funds that actually were mainland China stocks. Did they ever catch fire? Are they still around? I don't even know. I haven't heard one of them mentioned in years.
I don't think so. I mean, there was a period of time where that was just a gigantic deal, and now tons of money was going to flow into China because now they qualified for all of these MSCI indexes, and the index money would have to flow in. Maybe index money still does flow in there. I really don't know. That was part of the bullish thesis, which I'm never a big fan of a bullish thesis that doesn't involve fundamentals. That it's just okay, now people are going to be allowed to invest over there.
I haven't seen a commercial. I haven't seen anything to push it in years. So I'm wondering if they're even still around. Yeah. But I should ask my bro, but I think we probably could get a trade in Hong Kong. Might be a struggle,
I'm sure you
but
could. I probably could through my, I'm looking at my Interactive Brokers platform.
I was
going
to say, we could probably do it through our Interactive Brokers clearing arrangement. Yeah. I bet we can't do it through RBC, but we probably could.
I don't know, man, the Canadians and the Chinese love each other.
Well, for a long time, if you had $250,000, they let you come into Canada, right? And then they stopped that. But we still have a deal here, I think we do, where if you come in with enough money to do a project where you got 10 people working, don't you get like 5 citizenships or something? Or 4?
I'm not really sure. I'm looking to Italy.
I was thinking about Ireland.
Mm. Yeah, they'd take you.
Well, I would hope so. I could be a citizen there.
I know.
Actually, I could be a citizen in a... Same deal in Italy if your grandparents are from there?
No, it's not that. You can buy your way in.
With lira?
You can buy your way into Portugal, too.
Well, my brother's been to the village in Italy where we came from. Mm-hmm. And he said, why did they leave? Right on the sea, everybody goes out and fishes during the day, and you have really good pasta with fish at night, real healthy, and a little bit of wine, and you're good to go.
There's a former OIC instructor, and you just basically described his whole life.
Well, it's a. I think the town was Julian Oldham, I think it was.
Yeah. You know, and all business classes in Europe are taught in English. I could go over there and work tomorrow.
Now, the people who went overseas, when I was in school, there were only four spots. The only one where they taught in English was in Rome. But if you went to Angers, you had to know French. If you went to Innsbruck, you had to know German.
No. Nope.
Like my niece went, it's always frustrated my brother. At the time, I don't think they do anymore. She went to the University of Wisconsin, right? Which, of course, you had to pay up big time, you know, compared to Illinois. But Illinois and Indiana at the time had, I don't know if they do anymore, had reciprocal. So if somebody from Illinois went to Indiana, you got the in-state tuition. I don't think that's the way it is.
We don't have that. No. I'm certain of that because when I'm, yeah.
Anyway, but at the time, we did. I think it lasted, I don't know, maybe a decade, but then they stopped it. Well, she went to, from Wisconsin, she did a year over in Italy. Well, my brother finds out that it's an Indiana program, not Wisconsin's.
Mm-hmm.
So he calls up and says, hey, mofo, the tuition at Wisconsin's $40,000, and at Indiana it's $20,000, and by the way, it looks to me like she's in Indiana for this year. Doesn't make any difference. It's $40,000, buddy. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like, why is that exactly? And, you know, I guess the question is, why is that? But that he had a pony up to 40, not to 20, so... Mm-hmm. But he went over there. She had a great time. I mean, actually learned some stuff.
I can imagine.
Spoke fluent Italian. You know, it was a good do. I kind of wish I would have. Becomes how much do you want to do, Russell? I mean, in my era, you wanted to get into school and you wanted to get out. When I went to the University of Chicago, I could have gone. I don't know if it was the full second year or two quarters. I could have gone to the London School of Economics and gotten a degree from there as well, which would be pretty impressive on the wall.
That'd be very cool. You'd have a really cool piece of paper up on your wall.
And, but I'm sitting there going, God, it's been 6 years. The parents are helping out. Last thing I need to do is say you got to pony up for an apartment in London for a year. I don't know if they were ready for that. I just said, screw it. I just finished up in Chicago and got out and got a job. But that's old school, right? You get out and you get a job.
Yeah.
How far are we? We got 8 minutes to break.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you take us down this currency road here? We've had massive movements in the dollar. The dollar's been getting its ass kicked.
Well,
I mean, what now? If you're buying stuff from Europe, if you're selling stuff in Europe, you just made out like a bandit, right? If you're buying stuff from Europe, not so much. Correct.
Right. Right.
What is? It's hard for me even to describe to listeners, and you know, we're all about stocks and we're, you know, kind of all about sports and stuff. It's hard for me to even describe to people that the bond market is what, 2 to 3 times bigger than the stock market, and the currency market is what, 10 at least. When you see, the euros here are 114. Let me get a chart up here. Euros are 114 to the dollar, and I'm going to say. Beginning of the year, they were 108, would be my guess, which would be, you know, maybe a little over 5%. That's like what? That's like a 40% move in the market, isn't it?
Yeah. They can't. Well, hold. Which one were you talking?
The euro.
Yeah. Well, how are you saying that would be like a 40% move in the market?
Well, I mean, a 5% move in currencies, given the volume and so forth, and given the fact that they never usually move, you know, that's a 2-year move.
Oh, you mean like just the kind of the impact?
Yeah, but I mean, how many companies don't even have 10% margin? You just pissed away 5% of it on the currency move, right? If you're buying stuff from Europe,
I think you're over. So, currency is my worst area. First off,
you're a professor; you're supposed to know everything.
No, I don't teach international because I'm not good at currency. That's like the one area I always kind of when they interview and they say, what can you teach? I said, I can teach everything, but you really don't. I had a terrible international professor in college. And the reason I know he's terrible is I sat in one of his lectures 15 years after I graduated, and I ran out of paper writing down everything he said that was wrong about the real world.
Okay, the euro was...
It took a long time to get over it. But, no, I don't think a 5% change... companies used to be a big deal if you were hedging your currency. I'm not sure everybody's hedging their currency like they used to. But for multinational companies, you're oversimplifying it because they almost all have these natural hedges now where they do business in so many different currencies that, you know, it's not like... You know, you're a U.S. company, you buy all of your raw materials from Europe, they all just went up by 5%, and you're not also selling into Europe where you're also seeing an increase in the revenues of 5%. So I think at an individual company level, it's manageable even when it's, you know, somewhat dramatic.
116.25, not that long ago.
I know it was...
The euro was 102.6.
No, so, and I know why the U.S. dollar is doing what it's doing, and I think I don't think it's a good reason for it, which is there's this belief that that the rest of the world is good, that we're not going to be the reserve currency because Trump's going to make people so angry, there's a feeling that maybe the euro is going to be. I just don't see. But why would you want a reserve currency that's managed by a consortium of countries and not, you know, a central bank that doesn't necessarily have a specific political mandate.
Well, when you talk about currency,
I don't know. I'm just trying to think. But which one would you rather have? Would you rather have the U.S. dollar, or would you rather have the euro currency, or would you rather have, you know, China? For some strange reason, believes that they can make the yuan the reserve currency around the world. You know, that you say that U.S. dollars are created out of thin air. At least we kind of know how many U.S. dollars are out there. The yuan is really created out of thin air.
The idea of...
So what are your alternatives? See, here's the deal. If the U.S., after all, everything shakes out, the U.S. is very self-sufficient, not as integrated in the world economy like we used to be. You know, maybe that does increase global demand for the euro currency.
Well,
but I think that's the reasoning behind what's going on right now is you hear, you know, Mexico, well, we're just going to, you know, we're just going to start selling a lot more over to Europe. And if the U.S. is going to be more difficult to play with, and you hear an announcement around that, then you never hear anything else. And that's because after the announcement and it's explored, it's not viable. You make something in northern Mexico, you can get it to the United States that afternoon.
You
make something in northern Mexico, you can't. The infrastructure to get it to Europe ain't there.
You make an amazing relative argument.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so sure that you would if you turned it around and wrote the paper the other way, and you just looked at what the dollar's doing in terms of a currency over the last 10 or 15 years. If you would give the dollar's performance as a reserve currency anything more than a D or an F.
Hmm.
I think you get two totally different grades. You know, I got these guys at 102 and 107, and today we're 114. So we're talking 11.5% move in 3 months. That is not healthy. For any kind
of thing. It's extremely not normal.
Here's my
and we talked about earnings in a class. I did bring up currency in the earnings in class yesterday because you would love this. We're trading earnings with options.
Cool.
But we also talk ahead of time.
So do we. By the way,
I know you do. But we were, you know, we talked about. You know, things that pop up that not necessarily are normal quality of earnings things. And I did talk about something that you haven't heard a lot about. Used to be every once in a while you'd have a company that had like a funny earnings number, and it's because of foreign currency. And that just doesn't really seem to happen much anymore. I wonder if that's something that's going to start to come by. And I said this in class and got a lot of blank stares, but I really wondered if we might start to hear a little bit about the currency impact on some U.S. firms. But they're all so globally integrated now that, you know, a loss in one area with currency actually gets made up in another area.
I think that there's an awful lot of people still, and again, we got a break here because we missed the first break, an awful lot of people still that buy machine parts or something from Europe that are just out 10%. From the bottom. I mean, so say 5%.
Yeah, but then if they buy those parts and then they turn around and they sell something into Europe, it gets offset a bit.
Yeah, but a lot of people don't, and I'll bet even multinationals have trouble being balanced.
No, you can't be perfectly balanced, but they're a lot more balanced than they were like 30 years ago when this used to be a much bigger issue.
Well, you used to do everything.
You used to hit really in earnings season. I haven't heard this in forever, but in earnings season, you'd have one or two companies that had some bizarro earnings, and you know the actual earnings relative. They do the revenues you expected, everything else, but they they would have some bizarro number either due to a foreign currency gain or a foreign currency loss.
I would say
they hadn't properly managed that. Typically, it was a loss, but I haven't heard that come up.
Well, the reason why you don't, Russell, I think one of the reasons is if you're a seller overseas, it's positive for you,
right?
So you're not going to have Tesla come out even in these days of or Microsoft or somebody. Even these days where people are supposedly coming clean on their earnings, which I think is a bunch of crap, but where they're going to say, gee, we're down 20% in revenue and car sales. Boy, but if you put the currency stuff in there, it'd be 30. I don't think you're going to hear that from those guys. You'll hear it the other way around, where we're buying stuff from Europe and the currency stuff is hurting us, but you're not going to get the guy selling saying, you know, pulling back on his stuff, giving you the other side of the coin, I don't think.
Well, if those things are balancing each other out, of course you're not going to hear about it.
Right. I don't. Anyway, yeah. Let's do a quick break, and then we'll SP Futures up 128, and NASDAQ Futures up 539. It's the third, where we're talking 2.5 days of this after the outpeep from the treasurer, and only a few people seem to understand. And Trump followed up with that saying, well, he's not really going to can Powell. But he didn't say he was going to can him. He said, what do you say? His termination could not be quick enough. His termination is a much tougher word sometimes, isn't it? Anyway.
I need to talk about the end of his tenure.
Let's hope. We'll be right back, yeah. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Andrew on the board. SP Futures up 131. NASDAQ Futures up 550. Rallying here pretty good. Dow Futures up 693. Virtually everything's up. The Magnificent Seven's up huge. all the stuff they were down on Monday, they pretty much got back. NVIDIA was well under 100, now it's 104. Apple was under 200, it was down to like 194, it's back up to 206. So we're getting a bounce here. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 480, that's 2.25%, FTSE up 94, 1.1%, and the CAC around up 140, 1.9%. So we'll catch up yesterday, but they're also running with us today. Nikkei up 648, that's 1.9%. Hang Seng up 510, 2.4%. Shanghai down 3. Again, like we talked with Russell, they aren't going the same direction. We're down 3, call that unchanged. Bonds, big move here. We're down 10 basis points, 4.28. The 30-year, which is TYX, by the way, if you ever want to call it up, got to really close to 5% on Monday, and it's now down to 4.73. So that's a big retreat. The Bund up 2 basis points, 2.46. Japan up 2 basis points, 1.33. Oil down 67 cents, 63 bucks. Cannot get out of the low 60s. Brent down 69 cents, 66.75. Natural gas down a penny, under 3 bucks. It was 4 bucks not that long ago. RBOB unchanged at 209. Again, oil at 63 and RBOB at 209. That's a pretty big spread. Gold getting whacked here, down 78, 33.40. It made it up to 3,500, I think, yesterday morning. Silver down 8 cents, 32.82. We've got foreign exchange. Again, we've been talking about that. The dollar is 114 against the euro, and the British pound is 132.9. Call it 133. So the dollar is steady here, but it's still way lower than it was. Bitcoin up 2,300, 93,803. Maybe that's the new currency. How crazy would that be? What do you have for us? A real quick traffic weather sports, Andrew. Real quick.
All right. It is 7:36 here in Chicago on Wednesday, April 23rd. The White Sox lost to the Twins while the Cubs won over the Dodgers 11-10, bringing it to the 10th inning. For Chicago weather, it is currently 62 degrees. We're going to have a little bit of showers throughout the morning. Otherwise, it's going to be pretty mild day throughout with a high of 70 degrees. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 65 degrees. It's going to be a warm day with plenty of sunshine. And finally, for Chicago traffic, there are no major accidents to report, but things are looking pretty crazy out there if you're on the inbound. It looks like from the inbound Kennedy from O'Hare to the Jane Byrne interchange alone is going to take you 86 minutes. That is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
We got Boeing had earnings last night, and they're up $8, so that's 5%. Russell is flying back and forth here, sort of getting back and forth to the same place. I don't know what I would. I'm glad I don't have Powell's job. I'm not so sure because he clearly has, because of, you know, whatever your politics, the fact that seemingly big money has gotten even more control of what's going on in this country maybe than ever before, when you see people tramping with million-dollar briefcases to talk to the POTUS. The idea of letting the market sink, I don't know. I mean, we've got the inflation numbers. I don't see inflation coming down here at all. We're due for a money supply number for March here any day. I think we're probably still going to be in that 5-5.5% growth range. I don't see how you ever, I mean, maybe Russell can speak to this. I don't see how you ever have a, quote, defined recession the way they used to define it if you keep sneaking that much money into the system. Even if individual people are going to get gagged. But I want to get back real quick to your discussion on the world currency. I agree with you that if you look at all the other ones versus the dollar, I don't see it happening. But that doesn't mean it's sort of like, I don't know, like your car degrading. One of the things for a currency to be, one of the things currency is supposed to do, it's supposed to be you can trade with it, obviously. It's good for most stuff, which, by the way, now the dollar probably isn't the dollar in your hand trying to go to a ball game. But it's supposed to also be a storehouse of value, Russell. And I'm going to say it hasn't been. And, I mean, nobody gives a rat's behind about what, I guess, the people in rural Russia care about, I suppose. But there were times, 15, 20, 30 years ago, and maybe even now, where the storehouse of value for those people was to somehow find your way into 2, 3, 4, 5, hopefully 10 $100 bills from the U.S. That was what you wanted to have, because that's what kept you current. You couldn't be in the Russian ruble. God knows where that would go. Probably couldn't have gold. But now I'm going to say in the last 5 years, the value of that dollar has declined by 40 to 45% because of the actions of the Federal Reserve and the government. Part of it was COVID, whatever. Part of it's lying to us. As a storehouse of value, if you were to put, and I know a couple of people that did this, that had like $1 million in their retirement plan, put it in the bank 6 years ago, and they've made an average of like 1%, I'm going to say that $1 million is now worth $550 in buying power, maybe not even that. So as a storehouse of value, our currency is miserable. So you're right, on a relative scale, but at some point, when do you have to get off the relative scale and say the thing sucks, even though the other stuff sucks worse?
Well, that's why you use Bitcoin.
Well, okay,
that really is the big attraction behind Bitcoin. That was one of the big selling points.
Except there's nothing behind it.
And then take a look at what the price of gold's been doing.
Yeah, well, gold.
And that's been going on. It's funny, that's been going on for months, if not, more than a year, where there's just been this, and it's all been foreign buying.
Well, we have.
It's mostly been China buying, which makes me think that they play a long game. Which I think something military wise is going to happen in the next 12 to 18 months, if not sooner, over in Southeast Asia. And China's been kind of prepping themselves for it by loading up on gold, selling our bonds, kind of trying to decouple themselves as much as possible. I think that they were playing a 3 to 5 year game, and now they're going to have to speed it up.
I don't disagree.
The general thinking among a lot of China watching type people, China's big military move is going to be Taiwan. That's just that. And I think if you had said what's going to be Russia's big military move if they make one, it probably would have been Ukraine, because that's where a lot of the food comes from. That's where a lot of the precious minerals are, that sort of thing. For China can't do business on their own. They haven't mastered it. God knows Taiwan has. And I think they look at Taiwan as a way to revitalize Chinese business. They could, go in there, force all the private companies in Taiwan to give them a 10% share. Then they could start dictating how they behave and et cetera. The problem is, they probably have to destroy the whole island to take it over. But we'll cross that one when we get to it. Maybe all of our soldiers will show up on the beach in Taiwan, and everybody will greet us as liberators, like Russia thought would happen in Ukraine.
Yeah.
I feel like that's part of what's going on globally, is that it's kind of a resetting a few things to become as, and everybody's trying to become as decoupled with us as they possibly can.
Well,
justifiably so. But so, then they're discovering that they can't. And then they come to the negotiating.
Well, you can do a... Well, I think, one man's opinion, the guy has failed miserably at having people come here to kiss his ass with hat in hand. Somehow or another, it hasn't been the stream of people that... And you look at... I actually read something, Russell, and I'm hoping it's right, because I'm saying it, that the average American spends $1,500 on stuff from Canada, and the average Canadian spends $10,000 on stuff from the U.S.
Wow.
How the hell are we getting screwed?
Milk. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
There are some other things that we're upset with Canada about.
But, I mean, Wayne claims that in Florida, a lot of people that have houses down in Florida from Canada are selling them. They're getting out of here. And if Disney World, I'm not going to say it's probably 5% of their people were from Canada go there? Amusement parks?
I would assume so. That's about the proportion of the population to the U.S. So, and you know, they probably go to Disney World like we Disney, like, you know, the special trip twice a, twice when the kids are at a certain age. Yeah.
Well, you know what? I never had any desire to go to that place.
It's fine.
I'm sure it is. I mean,
just watch how much fun your kids are having.
All right. Well, I'm just wondering where are we? If we're looking, why do you? I'm just going to push back here because I don't know near much about China as you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that their first military move, if they do it, is going to be screwing around with these islands they're doing in the South China Sea.
Well, they already do that.
I'm saying I think they're going to expand there officially and dare us to do something about it, just to see.
They already have in their mind officially. Are you familiar with the nine dash
yeah.
nine?
But I mean, nobody's paying any attention to that. But I'm saying
you can't manufacture a map or a globe in China if it doesn't include it.
But I'm saying I don't know that it won't be officially taking real islands close to those or something. This is now us, and we're now 1,000 miles out. And I'm not saying I don't know that Taiwan will be.
They've tried to build artificial islands.
Yeah.
which are sinking.
Well, of course.
But they've tried to do that to claim territory.
How do you? It's got to be. It's got. I have to believe it's at least a shallow spot in the ocean. You don't just start.
It is. It's. They find like a. I forgot what the. Is it an atoll or something like that? It's not a full island. But you can start to fill stuff in, and that's what they do. Is they try to fill it in, and you know it's amazing how they try to recapture the land or whatever, and they happen to be just about the exact same size that you need to land bombers.
Well, you can't. But if you,
I really they like start to fill these things in. Oh, we're just reclaiming this land, and then you see a satellite photo a year later, and it's basically an airport.
Well, but if you, I mean, I'm not an oceanographer, but if you mm-hmm. went to the Bahamas once and you fly over stuff where you look down and you know the thing's 2 feet below the water.
Yeah, and I've seen an interview with generals about this, and they said, well, aren't you concerned about that? And they said, look, a conflict starts, those islands are gone in the first 10 minutes.
Well, I'm sure.
He said those are our first targets. They're 100% military. Those are our first targets.
Well, I'm saying how does anybody know? I guess what I'm trying to, you fly over Bahamas, you see something that if it was 2 feet higher, it would be an island. I think you could make an island there pretty easy, but if you got a 500-foot drop off, you're not going to start filling in 1,000 mm-hmm. feet or, well, how deep's the ocean? 2,000 feet? Three? I mean, you can't just make one anywhere.
There are spots where they're able to do that. I want to the whole buying thing. I was hoping you were going to talk about China because Dr. Adimiak and I, who go back and forth to Indiana, we were talking about you know, what is it that you need that we buy from China that you absolutely, if you can't buy it, you're not going to be able to live.
Well, the one family came to the swimming pools.
That you can live without a swimming
pool. Yes.
Seriously, I mean, what is there anything that you buy from China? I mean, I would die without my Nikes.
I don't. You know, I mean,
the only thing, and I don't know the specifics. I think there are some medical supplies, but I hope we learned in COVID that we need to find somewhere else to get them. There's nothing. Yeah, a lot of the targeting and the type of stuff that we seem to be doing. It's stuff that we don't need. We don't need all the plastic crap from China.
I'm not trying to. I mean, these are from my Pullman days. I mean, I know that there's workarounds on everything, and I agree with Kevin that if you give the American system and other people in the world any kind of time, I mean, what I would like to see, and you're never going to see it, something that I. You know, a pickup truck or something, or even an airliner, for instance. What the hell's the date today? The 23rd, and the 23rd of April, and we got you know, 1,000 parts in a pickup truck, and we got, you know, 300,000 parts in a plane. And right now, today, out of the 300,000 parts in a plane, there's 500 that we only can get from China. But by the way, if you push it out a month or two, 100 of them will be easily sourced here. 3 months mm-hmm. from now, you know, the other 200 we'll be able to get from Vietnam or someplace. But, I mean, there has to be a chart like that in some really intelligent person's mind or physically. I think there is stuff. I've read where they said a lot of times the little motors or this sort of transistor, this sort of a little tiny computer chip that goes into the seat or some crap in your car or goes into the dashboard or something only comes from China. Now, I know that if those are identified, you know, a year from now, we'll get them from Vietnam or some damn place. I get that part. Mm-hmm. But right now, today, I think there's a lot of stuff that nobody you would ever even dream of that only comes from a place there. And maybe there are some medicines, too. But I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think it's zero. I really don't. I mean, whether how significant it is or whether it's in a month from now we'll be putting out all the pickups we want or by the way, you're going to have to take the car when the seat doesn't move. And mm-hmm. we'll give you the chip a month from now. That could happen, called a retrofit. But I mean, saying the idea that we're so dependent or we're not dependent at all, I think we're somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not every place makes everything.
Well, I guess you could use the phrase convenient versus dependent. Yeah. Like, it's convenient and cheap to source a lot of things from China, but at a cost, it can be replaced.
But, I mean, it's probably
And maybe it's, you know, maybe it's worth it for the cost.
What I'm saying is someplace somewhere on a pickup mm-hmm. you're just buying, maybe it's the thing you plug your cell phone into that only, whatever it is, you can't tell me there's nothing on that truck that only comes from China.
Well, hopefully, eventually, there will be.
Right, but a year from now, I'm with you. But not
and that's going to be painful. And is it worth the pain?
Well, it's
worth it.
But now the next question is, mm-hmm. is it worth it for the Russell Chief Consortium to identify 10 of these little parts that don't cost squat and all of a sudden start making them here? And by the mm-hmm. way, how much are we going to have to charge? How much investment do we need in this place? And by the way, 6 months into this one-year construction, is Trump going to change his mind all of a sudden we're buying them back from China? I don't see that. That's my
real. I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, but I'm saying that's my biggest concern. I mean, because we got all kinds of people on the show that have different angles on this. Carl's talking about the pollution part and the child labor part. I agree with him 100%. But the point is, what we're asking people to do, either intelligently or not, is somebody is going to have to look and say, these parts come from these other places. Now, either us or Vietnam or some other place, even though we put a tariff on Vietnam too, somebody's going to have to say, I am convinced that I can now put together an operation that makes this stuff here, be able to pay people, be able to pay my interest on the building. I could go get the financing. I'm a year out. I have to have some sort of confidence that the world a year out is somewhat the same as it is today, and we just didn't say, okay, well, China's all right now. We're just going to get them all from them again. I don't know that anybody right now, given the action coming out of Washington, is confident enough in the policy of what's going on right now to do that. So the real, if that's the real goal, I think we're not getting there. Just saying.
Yeah, I think it's just going to take a lot. These things don't happen instantaneously. And that's part of the, you know, unfortunate aspect of it. And then, you know, when, you know, the thing that I think that maybe got misjudged a bit is, and maybe it shouldn't have been, is just how vilified all of this was going to be. You know, he's up there and he's creating tariffs which are going to just do nothing but make our lives absolutely miserable.
And because seemingly,
it's an extra tax. Well, because it's an extra tax and the consumers are going to be the ones that pay it and all this other kind of stuff. And you know, this is so the two main things that consumers are really you know, that are in your eyeballs. You know, for you and me, it's gas. You know, you do what my dad used to do. He would fill up one day a week at the exact same, you know, on Sundays, and go to the exact same place. Although he would try to shop around and find a few pennies cheaper, but you know, he was very, very familiar with the price of gas. And then this is the kind of stuff that if I say it incorrectly, I'm going to get, you know, in a whole lot of trouble. But there are people that I'll say it gender neutrally. And then there's generally somebody within your household that will be going to the grocery store every week and gets a lot of the same things. And you can see the price impact of that. I want to tell you right now that tariffs with China do not have an impact on the grocery store or what we pay at the pump.
I think what people,
you know, we don't.
I think
what, and so you're hearing all of this. You know, your world's going to come to an end. You know, you're not going to be able to afford to feed your family. All this other kind of crap, and that stuff has not been happening in the past couple of months. In fact, that stuff was happening last year.
All right. So
not this year.
Two questions. One is, yesterday we spent our time after eating at the Stocks and Jocks buffet. We walk over to Lakeside Bank. We decide we're gonna do these five things, whatever they are, that nobody gets from China, and we find ourselves a place on the south side that's abandoned, and in 2 months we'll have that thing up and running. We get the big loan from the Lakeside Bank, and we walk out and come into Stocks and Jocks this morning, and the first thing we do is we see is Trump softens stance on China tariffs.
Yeah.
What does that do for us?
Well, I mean, where you're sourcing something that normally comes from China that you're going to start buying in the U.S. now?
Yeah. No, we're going to start making here.
They're going to start making in the U.S. now?
Yeah.
Well, you put your whole plan on hold for a minute and wait and see.
Yeah. Well, that's
and that was an issue that was an issue that goes all the way back to COVID.
Yeah.
You know, there were people that used to make the masks, and they said, "Why don't you ramp up mask production?" They said, "Well, it costs money to ramp it up, and as soon as this crisis is over, I'd have to fire everybody and you know, take it and you know, shutter my facilities and net out. I'd probably end up losing a lot of money on this, and so I'm not going to do it."
See,
I don't think there are a lot of entrepreneurs that are jumping into the fray quite yet.
I think that the inflation piece, maybe because it's the right in front of your face every time you go to the store, right? That's I don't know. I've been doing this,
And we're not seeing that yet.
Okay, but I'm going back to
and I'm looking for it. Trust me, I'm looking for it. I stop at the exact same place every time I go down to Indiana, and I stop at the exact same place on the way back. And so I have a gas benchmark as well.
All right, but I have. I'm going to say, don't take this wrong.
If anything, it's gone down a little bit.
In my opinion, again, my schlumpy opinion, my genius friend Russell needs to look back past that a hair. I think the thing that's getting people in trouble now is the inflation lurking around you for the last 4 or 5 years. That why would you have any thought that was there? I've been putting. Place I live, I pretty much remodeled the whole place, right? Well, I went to price out the windows for the second floor. I put them in every place else but the second floor. I'm going to say they're 50% more than I paid for the top floor 3 years ago, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if this won't happen, I'm not going to jinx your ass. If the Rhodes family's air conditioner conks, you're going to get a price that's going to. You better have your shorts buttoned tight or a little drop. You won't believe. Or God help you if you need a roof. Or God help you if you need a plumber. I mean, the stuff. I sure don't want to wish this on anybody. Try and go to the doctor or an emergency room visit. I mean, the stuff that you don't know about, where you look at the increase in drug prices for somebody on Social Security. This stuff, it's way beyond gasoline. And you know, you go to the store, you can still feed people by doing sales and so forth. It's higher, but it's stuff you see every day. But it's not the stuff you see every day. I think that's the real problem. If you, I mean, you could have a regular house you bought 25 years ago and talk about putting windows in, and the windows are going to cost you a third as much as the house did. You know, 25. I mean, it's the stuff you don't normally do is where it all is right now.
Mm-hmm.
It could, and you don't know it until it hits you like a ton of bricks. That's why people's credit cards are going to the moon, because it's stuff they didn't even.
Because they end up having a, because they get the surprises.
Yeah, I mean, my old Suburban, so I had it. I'm going to say 14 years ago. I needed a transmission. These guys rebuilt it for me. I think it was $1,200, and they did a real nice job. I'm going to say you can't touch a transmission rebuild now, even on an older truck, for less than $3,000.
Okay.
I mean, what did Dan Janitas, when he used to be on the show, his transmission and his Mercedes went out. He ended up, was it $20,000?
Yeah, I remember you talking about that.
I mean, it's you know, that Audrey's friend, where she bought her car, they now have a finance department for repairs. And who would have thought of that 6 years ago?
Oh, I'm gonna tell you one that's gonna blow you away, and to everybody can ponder this for the next 22 hours. You know the Coachella.
Yeah.
You know that 60% of people that bought tickets to Coachella used the finance option.
Really?
Yep. They took out a loan to go to Coachella. Yeah, you want to, so...
How invasive, we should be dashing here, but how invasive is that? I mean, I go to like L.L. Bean, even though I have a credit card there, which I don't use.
Mm-hmm.
I throw two shirts and a pair of sweats on there. There's a financing option for something that's like $160.
Yeah, they're saying make four payments.
I mean, do people use that stuff?
Make sense to me.
Do people use that stuff to a huge degree?
Well, apparently 60% of the people that went to Coachella used that, because that's what they did.
Well, they put it on their regular credit card?
I see that as well when I buy crap online, and I totally, you know, just...
Well,
I'm going to do that. I'm gonna buy a shirt, and I'm going to do the four-payment plan to see how it actually works.
Well, if my question is, if I mean a lot of people's credit cards give you 1%, 2%, and 3% back on this stuff. So, plus, you know, so and most of them are pretty darn good. If somebody messes with your card, they don't charge and stuff. They're pretty good at that. So I can surely see why somebody would use their regular credit card. But you're saying that they use the Coachella financing option means
they use the Ticketmaster or whatever,
which means there's no room on the credit card, right?
Yeah.
That's not good.
Nope.
Who was on yesterday that said it's what percentage of people now are 11% are making the minimum payment higher than it's ever been?
I know credit card defaults 6 months ago were starting to go through the roof, so they couldn't have gotten any better.
Well, I mean, I think the real number that jumped recently who was on yesterday, was it Hal saying that the minimum payment is 11 or 11.5% of people.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked.
Are you? Were you home for Easter? Or are you back in Indiana? Or are you still here?
I'm sitting on the couch, 17 and a half miles west of you right now.
With the pooch. But
I went to visit your favorite girl in D.C. She's very excited to come on in late May.
That'd
so
be cool.
We'll see you in late May. And she took me to her club for dinner. While I was over there, she's a member of the National Press Club and on the leadership.
Did she make you dress up?
She did not make me dress up. No, I dressed appropriately.
Cardigan.
And she was on a panel at a conference and did a wonderful job.
Were you sport coat or cardigan?
Sports coat.
There you go. Tie.
Yeah, no tie.
So you look good.
Good
for you. Yeah. She's the best.
We came straight from the conference, and I used that old trick. I looked at pictures of people from the conference the year before and dressed like them.
Well, there you go.
That's not brain surgery, is it?
No, it's, you know, and we used to have clients down in Arizona a lot. A lot of them aren't with us anymore due to death, not because they left. The desert formal, was it boat shoes, khakis, polo shirt, and blue blazer, right?
I have never worn a polo shirt with a blazer.
I'm saying desert formal.
What I've never. I know. I know. There was a dude that I was on the board of education with that dressed like that every week. And I'm like, do you think the coat makes you look formal? You just look like a jackass.
Desert formal. Well, remember Miami Vice was a T-shirt and a sport coat.
Well, that's different.
Why? Because you weren't Dan Jansen?
That's different. That's like wearing a matched, you know, suit, etc. This guy was just, you know, it's like he looked like he came straight from the golf course and slapped on a sport coat. That's not the same. That is not a Don Johnson look.
God. Anyway, the young Don Johnson. Anyway, you take care of yourself. Good stuff.
Board of Education.
Talk at you soon. S&P futures up 136. The NASDAQ futures up 567. We're to the moon here. We'll see how long this lasts. At least for a while here, it looks like. Back tomorrow, Stacks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.